Of the 1 in 3 Australian workers who will experience some form of sexual harassment, bullying, or discrimination in the workplace in any given year, we know that only 18% of them will put their hand up and report it.
When I look back on my sales career, for example, like looking back on a few things that happened, as a woman, I sort of laughed it off. But if I really reflect back, I didn't really know at the time, because I was quite young, I was in my early 20s, that could have been potentially some kind of sexual harassment.
There are 4 predominant reasons why people don't put their hand up and say this is happening to me and it's not okay. One of the main reasons people don't report is because they're not sure that what they've experienced actually does fall within a category of sexual harassment, bullying, or discrimination. Number 2, I don't believe my organisation will do anything about it. Number 3, I don't believe that my story will be kept private. And number 4, this is going to be a career-limiting move for me and I will be victimised as a result.
Welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am really excited to have this conversation with you today. I've been following your journey for a little while now, fascinated by the work you are doing. It is so needed in our current society. I think you're addressing some real issues, and we're going to go into all of that today. But before we dig into all of the nuts, the bolts and things, I want to just start by a quick introduction into who you are, your background, and what got you so passionate about workplace safety, mental well-being. So, Sally, over to you.
Who am I? Why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yes.
Well, thanks, Georgie. It's really lovely to be here and very nice of you to think and follow RespectX and to give us an opportunity to talk about what we're doing. I'll just tell you a little bit about me and where I came from. So I describe myself now as a 60-year-old startup tech entrepreneur, which is not something I actually ever thought that I would be doing. But if I look at my career history, everything has led me to this point. And so I really, Georgie, have spent my entire life working in both the public and the private sector. And my driving force the whole way through, even though I couldn't have articulated this when I began my career, if I look back at my career, the common theme has always been around how can we make work a place that enriches us, not just gives us money. So the harsh reality is most of us will spend most of our life at work, and for most of us, there will be no choice around that. It will be out of economic necessity. So if we're going to be at work, how can work deliver more to us than just financial return? How can it enrich us as humans? That's been my overwhelming driving purpose. And if I look back, I think what's led to that has been this really strong awareness the whole way through my career that there is no level playing field, that we do not all have, we're not born with, and we don't necessarily assume the same level of opportunity. And so there is inherent unfairness and inequality in our whole society, and the workplace is just one element of that. So really, I've always been driven around how can we level that playing field, how can we give everybody a fair go, and how can everybody have access to the same sort of opportunities.
I absolutely love that. Look, it's really interesting, and it's honestly not something that I gave much thought to myself up until sort of my late 20s. I think growing up, and I think it's always like I check my privilege, right? I grew up in a nice little town in the UK. I didn't have any sort of real trauma growing up. There was no sort of real like crime in my area. So I know that I've always got to constantly check my privilege. And I think you don't realize that until you get older and you get a bit more well-traveled and you meet people from different walks of life. But I've always been fascinated as well, like by the whole, the gender piece is really something that I've sort of focused on, because when I actually look back through my career, now I'm actually consciously aware of some of the things that I went through, like people, you know, my male counterparts being promoted, my male counterparts being on more money than me, a significant amount more money than me, actually. And it hasn't, it's only probably been in the last sort of few years that I've really wanted to do something about this and bring awareness to this topic, because I speak to so many candidates every single day. I run a recruitment company. So you see firsthand, and I'm now so consciously aware with the gender pay gap going on, with how women particularly were sort of maybe sort of have a lot less confidence, so they won't put themselves forward for roles, or they'll talk themselves out of things. It's rife, and it doesn't seem to be getting much better. So I'd love to sort of dive in. Let's take it back now to your role at KPMG, because you were there for 14 years. That's a long time in that type of corporate environment. Can you talk about that journey, what you achieved there, what you're brought in to do, and how that role evolved over those 14 years?
Yeah, okay, sure. I was at KPMG for 14 years. I was a partner at KPMG. I spent most of my time in the defence sector, but I was also the national lead partner for culture, diversity and inclusion at KPMG. And in that role, I spent a lot of time in organisations from, you know, across the board, banking, education, public sector, private sector organisations, mining, generally when there had been some kind of what I call a cultural failure. So something had gone wrong. It was either a cultural crisis, a crisis of reputation, potentially a crisis of relevance. And so I was often brought in with our team to look at what actually happened here, what were the contributing elements to this incident, and what can we do differently to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So it was go in and actually explore, identify prevalence of whatever the issue was, what were the contributing factors, and what do organisations need to get out of, to create a different culture. And, you know, it's so interesting, Georgie, because a lot of the work that I did was where there had been some kind of sexual harassment, sometimes bullying, sometimes discrimination, but sexual harassment was a really big reason why I was often brought into an organisation to help that organisation unpack what had gone on. And, you know, when you go to do that kind of work, you can pretty much tell, you can tell pretty quickly when you walk into an organisation what has been going on to contribute to a culture which has enabled sexual harassment to occur. And, you know, the big kind of drivers are always, number one, leadership. What do leaders value? What do they recognise? What do they reward? What do they walk past? And what do they role model? So the number one driver of a culture in any organisation is leadership. Then the second thing that's always really, you know, incredibly interesting is it's around, you know, yes, you can look at what are the policies that people have in place, what are the procedures that people have in place, what are the systems, how are people trained, how are people, you know, rewarded in terms of performance. But actually the really big things are, what do leaders value and recognise? What do they role model? What do they expect? What do they jump on? But also, who are the people who have influence? What are the things, the unwritten ground rules, which get you recognised and promoted within an organisation? What are the unwritten ground rules that can actually have you sidelined and put in the back paddock or put in the too hard basket? They are always really, really, really big cultural drivers. And I think, you know, we're at this very critical time now where so much of the kind of cultural attributes in our society that we've assumed as just the way things are now being challenged. So we're at this very interesting intersection where sort of the Me Too movement, which really kicked off in 2018, has really started this big conversation about what's okay and what's not okay. The focus of that conversation has always been predominantly around gender and around, you know, the role and the experience of women in workplaces. But I think in sophisticated organisations where we're broadening our thinking around, you know, harassment, bullying and discrimination to include not just gender issues, but to look at issues like, you know, cultural heritage, religious affiliation, sexual orientation and those other sorts of differences. So I think there's a hangover from what used to be okay is no longer okay. We now have a very specific set of legislation which says actually not only is it illegal to treat people unfairly, to bully people, to treat people badly, to harass people, to make people feel unsafe. Now, legally, we require you to positively prevent those kind of behaviours in an organisation. So over the last 7 years in this country, the conversation has really shifted. So I think the really big conversation now, what I'm really interested to see and why we've set up RespectX is because we really want leaders to step up and to lean into the opportunity that exists for them to make their workplaces safer and more fun, actually.
That is just so powerful. And when you were speaking there, I was just, reflecting like, the word sexual harassment is quite confronting.
That's
sort of what I felt. I thought, oh, that's a really sort of like the sexual harassment seems to be, you know, nobody wants to be confronted with that. But how would you define it? Because it's like when I look back on my sales career, for example, like looking back on a few things that happen, as a woman, I sort of laughed it off. But if I really reflect back, I didn't really know at the time because I was quite young. I was in my early 20s. Yeah. That could have been potentially some kind of sexual harassment, but I wouldn't necessarily have labeled it as that. I would have just been like, oh, it's just office banter. But where do we draw the line and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable?
Yeah, it's such a good question, Georgie, because I think, RespectX is a report. At the end of the day, it's a prevention ecosystem, which is designed to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace. But actually, at the heart of that prevention ecosystem is a reporting platform. And one of the reasons, and the reason we created RespectX is because we know in this country, and I'm coming to answer your question, but we know that of the 1 in 3 Australian workers who will experience some form of sexual harassment, bullying, or discrimination in the workplace in any given year, we know that only 18% of them will put their hand up and report it.
Wow.
Only 18%. And we'll come back, let's circle back to that conversation because that's a big conversation. There are four predominant reasons why people don't put their hand up and say, this is happening to me and it's not okay. And the first reason is really relevant to the question that you just asked me. The main reason people don't put their hand up is because, like you, I'm just not quite sure. Maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe I should just get over it. I'm not sure whether formally that is sexual harassment or not.
Well, I don't want to make a scene. I don't want to draw attention. You know?
But the issue of clarity. Mm-hmm. I know what just happened has made me feel awful, humiliated, unsafe, fearful, but I don't know whether it actually ticks the box for sexual harassment. So I think that's a really important conversation, and I think it is really worth you and I just spending a little time just to confirm and clarify what actually sexual harassment looks like, because maybe there are lots of listeners out there who have had that experience themselves or are having it right now. So at its heart, sexual harassment, and I'm not making this up, this is just the legal definition, it's an unwanted sexual advance, an unwelcome request for sexual favours or other unwelcome conduct, now that is sexual in nature. So that conduct could look like, comments about a person's body. Oh, gee, you look great in the uniform, Georgie. It really, really shows off your legs. Or displaying or sending sexually explicit material, staring at somebody, leering at somebody, making suggestive comments or making really, really inappropriate jokes in their presence or asking people really inappropriate questions around their sexual activities or their dating history, unwanted touching, unwanted invitations to go out or other things. So it's anything, and often it's the joke or it's the most typically it's the comment that's just a bit off. Yeah. It's a comment that just sort of is, it's too personal, it's too intimate, that relationship doesn't exist. It's particularly pertinent when you've got a big power imbalance or an age imbalance. And often, Georgie, the sexual harassment is fairly harmless in intent. Very often, it might be a harmless comment that a colleague makes that they don't intend to be offensive. But actually, it often is. And so one of the big challenges that we've got now is we have such enormous diversities in generations in the workplaces. So it's very, you know, we often hear stories about a 60-year-old male co-worker telling a 19-year-old female co-worker that she looks great in her uniform, for example. He possibly thinks he's being quite charming. She experiences that as intimidating and frightening and just a bit yuck. Actually, it's sexual harassment. Now, I just want to be really clear about this because at the end of the day, if it makes you feel uncomfortable and unsafe, it is a problem. And I think one of the big problems that people really struggle with is, you know, he didn't mean it that way. I don't want to make a scene. You know what? The biggest gift that you can give that older worker is the benefit of understanding that what might have been okay 20 years ago is not okay now. And actually, if he wants to be relevant and current in the workplace, then he needs to have an opportunity to kind of do better, understand that the rules have changed and understand that we're engaging with one another in a different way. So that was a very long-winded answer to your question, but that is what sexual harassment is. And don't beat yourself up because most people don't report it because their number one concern is it actually sexual harassment or not? The second thing I would say to you, Georgie, about not beating yourself up is that every woman listening to this podcast, myself included, can think back to three or four things at least that have happened to them in their career where they wished that they'd said something. And I know that, you know, for me, I've got lots of those examples and the reason I didn't say something at the time was I didn't feel powerful enough, I felt that it would be a career-limiting move, or I didn't want to cause offence to the other person. Well, you know what? Get over that. You are powerful enough. You actually have every right to provide that kind of feedback. And you know what? You're not doing anybody any favors by letting things slide.
I completely agree. And what you just said about that comment there was really powerful of like letting that person know, that older gentleman, that that's not how we now behave and that's not how we communicate. And actually that's not respectful and it's made you feel this way, because if you don't stand up, then he's going to think that's okay and continue to do it and continue to cause offense to more people, right? And that's the thing. I think people's intent, it's not necessarily to make someone feel uncomfortable, like you say. It's just like you say, we're working with multiple generations in the workplace, and what was okay 20 years ago is not okay now. But you think as well, like, it's only been really in the last, God, you know, I'd say 30, 40 years where, you know, I would even say women have really been accepted into the workplace, and we still have so many issues around that as well. I think it's just, even if I reflect back to my mum, right? That was only 30 years ago when she was in the workplace, but it was a totally different situation for her back then. She never would have dreamed of putting her hand up if she felt uncomfortable, because she would have probably been fired on the spot. Whereas now, and that's the truth. So I think we've almost been programmed, Sally, I think, to, you know, when I look back at my childhood years, don't put your hand up, be a good girl, sit quietly. It's almost been programmed into women. Don't make a scene. Oh, he didn't mean it. It's just a joke. Don't overreact.
Don't just go outspoken.
Correct. Don't stand up. Don't use your voice. And I think this is really, really powerful to have these conversations, because it is really important that we do speak up about it, because that's what's going to bring awareness to, and that's what's going to help prevent these things from continuing to happen in the workplace and just in life in general. But let's talk about RespectX now. So part of the problem with this, with everything that we're discussing here, is maybe you don't want to go and make a scene. Maybe you just want to just report it in a way that's sort of confidential, that you're not going to be sort of like in a room, in a boardroom, sat with this person. Like, that's so, you know, frightening and confronting. So how is RespectX solving these issues? What's its purpose? What's its mission? How is it going to help anybody who's being bullied and harassed in the workplace?
Well, that's a gift of a question, isn't it? And I'll try and not take the remaining 40 minutes when I answer it. But there are so many reasons why my two co-founders and I set up RespectX, so many reasons. And the first goes back to your first question, my experience providing advice to other organisations. And I probably got to the point, Georgie, where I thought, you know, I can't go into another organisation and provide another report with another set of recommendations and know that actually they're probably not going to get implemented and there probably isn't the real will for change. There are so many things that can make a difference to people's feelings of being safe and respected at work. There are so many things. But I sort of got to the point, I guess, where I thought, you know, for the rest of my career, I want to do something really concrete and really practical that is going to make an immediate difference now. Because I also got to the point where it was just unacceptable to me that too many people, and this is not just a gender topic, too many people, women in particular, were not feeling safe at work. I mean, let's just stay there for a moment.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is to your point around being conscious of your privilege. We are privileged to be in a position where we have some choice around work. We're even more privileged to be in a position where we have choice around who we work for. For the vast majority of workers in Australia, work is a necessity in order to survive, in order to put food on the table and a roof over a head. Work is not a choice. So let's just start there. So if we accept that the vast majority of us have not, we absolutely must work, then it is unacceptable to me that one in three of us will feel unsafe when we're at work. And let's just stay with that. I mean, I don't know about you, but some days the mere effort of actually getting up, getting dressed, getting out the door and getting to work feels like, feels like an enormous achievement in itself. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to be dealing with once you've gotten there is the fact that you're not feeling safe. That can be you're being actively harassed or bullied or discriminated against. It could be just a niggling doubt that you're being undermined. It could be far more serious than that. But that's just unacceptable, particularly if you think about, you know, what we're all about, which is work should provide you with opportunities to grow and develop and experience some joy and enrichment, right? So the first reason we set up, the main reason we set up RespectX was because it is unacceptable to us that people are not safe when they're just trying to earn a living and look after themselves and their families. That's number one. Number two, when we looked at the number one thing that we could do to make it safer at work, we very quickly realized that if we could get reporting rates up, we could change the rate at which people were experiencing a lack of safety and a lack of harm. And so then we looked at, well, why aren't people reporting? Now, I've already talked about one of those reasons with you. One of the main reasons people don't report is because they're not sure that what they've experienced actually does fall within a category of sexual harassment, bullying, or discrimination. The other big three reasons, and these are the reasons why we built RespectX. Number two, I don't believe my organisation will do anything about it. Number three, I don't believe that my story will be kept private. And number four, this is going to be a career-limiting move for me and I will be victimised as a result. So those four reasons, I'm not sure they're not going to do anything, I won't be believed. I won't be able to keep it private and I'll be victimized as a result. That's just unacceptable. So if we accept that it's absolutely reasonable and, in fact, it should be absolutely given that people are safe at work, how do we make it safe for people to put their hand up and report when that's not when that is not happening. So we built a system, a platform, in fact, a whole system that addresses all of those, the reasons why people don't report. So number one, RespectX is dead simple, dead easy, and dead quick. It's an app-based platform that anyone can access on their phone. You can make an informal or formal report in 2 minutes. So number one, it's really easy, it's really accessible, and it actually helps you work out what has happened to you. It takes you through being able to kind of define what you've experienced. Number two, it is completely anonymous. There is a big difference, Georgie, between confidentiality and anonymity. RespectX gives you the option to make a report that is completely anonymous. So your workplace will never know who has made that report. Number three, because there is a third party called us supporting both the employer and the reporter through the process, there's a level of independence and support for both parties. So we're all about trying to help employers and employees together to get to a better solution, to get to a get to a resolution. And fourthly, we've really built RespectX to be based on absolute common sense. So we know from the research, if people can put their hand up early, if we can nip issues in the bud, we can kind of get to a resolution before issues escalate and become really big challenges. So we've really built RespectX to make it simple, easy, anonymous for people to put their head up early and give their employers the opportunity to go in and make a difference.
And that's the thing. A lot of the times it doesn't need to get out of hand. It can just be a quickly nipped in the bud, as you said. So let's take a scenario then. Let's just say there's a woman listening to this right now. She's in a workplace and she's listened to this and she's gone, okay, I am experiencing some sexual harassment. What could be the next step for her then? Would she go to the RespectX platform first? Does the employer have to implement the RespectX into its workforce? Like, how does it work?
So at the moment, if you are experiencing anything in your workplace, the first thing that I would ask you to do is check that you're safe. And if you're not safe, if you're actually feeling that you are in immediate danger, then, you know, ring the police. So that's the first thing. It's really important to start there, and RespectX always takes you there. If that's not the situation, you can go onto the RespectX website. You can find out whether or not your employer is a RespectX employer, and that's really easy. You just go into the section which says I'm making a report about. You type in the name of your employer. It will very quickly tell you whether or not your employer is a RespectX employer. If your employer is not, you can still tell us your story, and you can still tell us your story anonymously. And what we can then do is we can then pass that story on to your employer, A, so that they know that an anonymous report, well, it's not a report, but an anonymous story has been told, they have an issue, they might need to look at it. They will not have your name, but they might have enough to know that there is a problem in a location or a team that might warrant them to go and, pay some more attention, do some general awareness training, put some sort of communications out, monitor some behaviours, but do some immediate things that will provide them a better opportunity to see what's going on. But also at that point, that that person's employer has the opportunity to become a RespectX employer. So, your story is not lost. Your story is actually passed through, and also through the RespectX website, you can be referred to other sorts of agencies who can provide you with all the sorts of support and guidance that you might need if we can't do it on behalf of your employer. So it's a really great place to start. And that certainly happened. I mean, I'm just thinking about a story that we were told in the last 24 hours. It was a student at a university who had received just a really, really inappropriate email from a staff member. Now, that university is not a RespectX employer yet, but still we have a story there that we can alert them to, and they can go and take the actions that they need to take.
I just think you're solving such a huge problem in our society and also providing such a safe space for people to go and tell their stories. I think sometimes people just want to tell their stories. I think just by speaking out, it's empowering and it kind of like loosens the grip of you. But, you know, I just do want to say, like you just said then, you know, if someone is listening to this right now and they are going through something at work, like sexual harassment, like please know you're not alone. There's platforms like RespectX. Obviously, you know, if it's serious, like you said, Sally, please reach out to the authorities and get support. But it's just so good to know that this is now around, because it certainly wasn't around when I started my career. And had it have been, maybe I would have potentially said a few things, but I'm just so grateful for you, Sally, that you're doing something about this. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. But let's talk about the organizations now, because you, when you sort of first touched upon, when we sort of went into the conversation, obviously you were a consultant at KPMG going into a lot of these businesses, and you mentioned like there was just this sort of energy, this feeling, this vibe in the organization. What do you think makes a workplace toxic? You've obviously spoken about the leadership. Is that the kind of common theme that you see when you're going into these organizations?
So, look, in no particular order, I think, the most important, and I said this before, but the most important driver of the culture of any organization is the senior leadership of that organization, because people look to their most senior leaders to understand what's valued, how things are done around here, what we talk about and what we ignore. So it is the most important driver of culture in an organization. So, you know, and you can tell when you go into a leadership team how strategically aligned those leaders are. Have you got a leadership team who together are joined at the hip around wanting to run an organization that is safe, that is respectful, where people can come and do and be their best? So all of that sort of stuff is really, really important. And I think one of the big things that I have seen a lot in my career is that some senior leaders don't necessarily understand the link between culture and performance. So people think culture's the soft stuff. People think culture just happens organically. People think culture's what you concentrate on when you're making lots of money and you've got the resources and the time. Big mistake. Culture is what drives performance. Culture is where it's where everything starts. Who wants to come and work for you? Who wants to stay with you? Who do you attract? What do your stakeholders and customers say about their experience of you? Because you can bet your life that the culture that is experienced inside the organization is also the culture that is driving the reputation external to the organization. So, you know, it's very, very interesting when you go and you watch a leadership team meeting and talking with one another, and then when you go and meet those people individually and talk to them individually, you get a very strong read around how much authenticity there is in the room, how much safety there is in the room, and how much mutual respect and regard there is in the room. Now, if you're working in an organization with a senior leadership team who are authentic, respectful, who listen, who encourage different ideas, and who start from a place of kind of what I would call extreme listening with an element of real generosity, if that's what's happening around that senior leadership table, that's what will be permeating throughout an organization. And people will say, but in a big organization with very distributed workplaces and lots of different locations where our work is taking place, how can we impact what is happening culturally in our organization. Well, how you impact it is by hiring leaders like you, hiring leaders at every level who really value those things like safety, respect, authenticity, courage, generosity, listening to understand, not listening to win. So, you know, it sounds easy. It's actually incredibly hard. It starts at that top table. If it's not happening there, it's not going to happen anywhere. And even just listening, Georgie, you can, when you listen to the way that people talk in the corridors of an organization, you can hear like how much gossip is there, how much undermining is there. Also, when you look around that table, how much diversity is there? How many women are there? How many men? Are there people from, you know, from different cultural backgrounds? So those, they're pretty obvious, really. You can see it really quickly.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely fascinates me. And over the last 10 years of working in recruitment, I have gone in, as you can imagine, to multiple businesses. And you're so right. There's an energy, there's a vibe to a place. I can walk into somewhere and go, this feels like a really nice place to work. Everyone seems happy. Everyone's chatting. Everyone's laughing. Then I can go into another place and I go, oh, something feels off. I don't know, like people are just sort of not seem to be communicating, fearful, all sat with their headphones checking. I don't know, it just feels different. It's got a different energy to it. And so I'm just sort of thinking about that organization, right? So maybe they had good intentions when they started the business and they can slowly but surely, maybe they've made a few wrong hires. They know that they don't have the best culture, because one thing I get asked a lot of that what's especially right now is a lot of companies want to hire more diversity into their team. So like, we want to hire more women. And I'm like, that's fantastic. I was like, but diversity without inclusion is never going to work, right? So I can send females to you, and I'm very aware when I partner with companies what kind of cultures they have, because there's no point me placing a female into a business if I know she's not going to be set up for success. So I'm very selective with now who I want to work with and who I want to recruit for. But the companies that want to hire more diversity but perhaps know deep down that they've got a few things to fix up before they can really start having that inclusivity, any sort of suggestions, thoughts on where they can begin to try and change the culture, change the narrative, anything they can do, big or small, that you've seen make an impact?
You know, this, it's a complicated question.
I know,
but
but
that's okay. Let's unpack it together.
Let's dive.
The first thing is culture. The culture of an organization is not it's not a one-time fix. It's not a set and forget. It's a daily effort. It's a daily effort. And I've always believed that the job of leaders is to every day nurture, encourage, reward, and highlight the culture you want. So first of all, it starts with the first thing you can do is be the culture that you want to see. Every single leader in the place, be the culture that you want to see. Number two, the biggest mistake, do not believe your own hubris. So many organizations have got great value statements. They've got CEOs who promote the fact that they're a speak-up culture. They, you know, there's a lot of rah-rah. There's a lot of drinking of the Kool-Aid. It's a big flaw. Do not believe your own hubris. If somebody comes to you with an issue or a suggestion, don't start with defensiveness. Start with inquiry. You know, ask the question, unpack the suggestion, work out what's going on. Be alive to the fact that it takes years to build a culture and it can go in a heartbeat. It can go. So it's a non-stop endeavor by every leader to constantly be navigating the culture of your organization toward in the direction that you want it to go. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, it's okay to get things wrong. It's okay to make a mistake, but own it, talk about it, be transparent about it, and do something different. So those really important values around being open, being curious, being transparent, talking about what's working, talking just as much about what's not working. They're really, really important things. I think the people that hold really critical positions are like, who are the people who are providing the real advice to that executive committee? Who are they really, really listening to? Where are they getting their data points from? I am amazed, Georgie, when I go into organisations, and let's get back to RespectX, I'm amazed when I go into organisations to do a review of the rates of, let's say, sexual harassment in an organisation, and people say, we have a system. We have a system. We've had no report, so therefore there's nothing going on here. You've got a system and people aren't using it. That tells you something. Why aren't they using it? Oh, it's actually really, really hard to find on your intranet. Why aren't they using it? Oh, actually, it's like a four-page whistleblower document that is really, really hard to navigate. You have to be in front of a computer to be able to access it. It does not have an option for anonymity. It doesn't help you navigate your way through the process of making reports. So the first thing that is a bell for me is we've got a system. Nobody's using it. That means we don't have a problem. No, that means you've got a real problem with your system, number one. Second big thing people say to me is, oh, we're a small organisation. We'd know if something was going on here. Big mistake. And in fact, the very first client that RespectX ever had was an organisation of 30 people. A new CEO went into that organisation and overnight had 6 complaints of bullying.
Wow.
Now, for whatever reason, those 6 people had not felt safe enough to report those formally to their previous CEO. An investigation took place, wildly expensive. You know, a conclusion was sought, and it was an expensive and painful, process. And that's a really common story. So that's the second thing. Don't believe, that kind of myth. The third big thing I hear all the time is, oh, we have a great culture. That doesn't happen here. Don't believe your own hubris. Culture is not a set and forget. It's a daily effort. Question that. How do you know? What data are you getting? Where are you getting it from? How do you know that it's really, really, that you're getting the real picture? And this sort of stuff is critically important for organisations now, particularly organisations which have got boards on them, because if you are a board director and somebody is harmed in your workplace, whether they're harmed because, they have a potentially fatal fall, or whether they are harmed because they've suffered debilitating psychosocial harm at work, you can be personally liable. So make sure you understand what's actually going on in your organisation. Question the hell out of the cultural data that you're getting. Very, very long-winded answer to the question, but all of those things really matter.
You're so right, and it just all goes back to what we were just saying. But I just can't believe in 2023 these things are still happening. Have we made any progress, do you think, or are we going backwards? Like, what's going on?
Well, we are making progress, Georgie, but we're not making it fast enough. And again, it's the reason why we created RespectX. So let me just take you back to 2016, mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, God.
Suddenly, everybody
was doing it.
We're doing it. Remember that?
Yes.
Everybody was talking about this culture of appalling behavior. Now, we're at the pointy end now. We're at the pointy end of sexual assault. And I want to talk about, I want to be very clear that 90% of what most people want to report most of the time is actually in the informal category. 90% of what people want to put their hand up about is, I just want this to stop. Can you get in here? Can you give us some support? Can you nip this stuff in the bud before it blows out of all control, right? That's where most of reporting that should happen sits. But let's go back to Harvey Weinstein, because that's what really created the movement that led to the legislation that we now have in Australia. So 2016, Harvey Weinstein. The Me Too movement starts in earnest about 2017. It seems to me, and I guess I was looking for this stuff at the time, but every week there was some high-profile case, NRL, AFL, Swimming Australia, Gymnastics Australia, Channel 9, Channel 7, you know, financial institutions, banks, government, Parliament House. I mean, it seems like every single sector, every industry and sector in the country had some kind of high-profile scandal in those intervening years where somebody very senior had done something entirely inappropriate, if not illegal, and there'd been some kind of high-profile sacking, right? So it was very clear to all of us that the media were interested in these stories because the community were interested in these stories because none of us want to go and work in organisations that stand for that. None of us want our kids in those organisations. Shareholders don't want to deal with those kind of organisations. The pressure was really on. 2020, Kate Jenkins did her seminal report, Respect at Work, which led to the new legislation, 55 recommendations, all implemented. From the 12th of December this year, the Australian Human Rights Commission will have enforcement powers, which means they can go into any organisation and just check whether or not that organisation has implemented all of those 55 recommendations, including a positive prevention of those sorts of behaviours. So all of that massive focus in the last 7 years. Now, here's the rub, Georgie. In 2017, at the beginning of this process, the number of people who were putting their hand up to report behavioural misconduct leading to psychosocial harm at work was 17%. 2023, the number has risen 1 percentage point to 18%. So in answer to your question, have we done enough? No. Have we gone far enough? Absolutely not. Have we made enough of a difference? Absolutely not. Because we are still, you know, 7 years after the Harvey Weinstein conversation started, all of us thinking about this, we've still only got 18% of people reporting that they're not feeling safe and respected at work. It's unacceptable. So what do we need to do differently? First thing we need to do is make it easy for your people to tell them when they're not okay in the workplace. Here is the thing that I think is fascinating. I think, and if you said to me, Sally, what's the one big change you want to make? I would say to you, the mindset shift I want to make in every leader in this country and around the world, and in every worker in this country and around the world, is that reporting is a good thing. Providing feedback about your experience is a good thing. Leaders should be driving, leading, encouraging, and rewarding a high reporting culture, because reports are great, because reports give us the opportunity, A, to know what's happening on our watch, and B, to get in early and do something about it before it blows up into a much bigger problem with much greater harms. So that is the number. And, you know, look, really, it's a call to action to every leader in the country. Really, don't just talk about having a safe to speak up culture, because most of that's just wind, noise and wind and window dressing. And we clearly don't have nearly as many organisations having a safe to speak culture as are claiming it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have that rate sitting at 18%. My call to action for every leader in the country is get really serious and about making it really safe and easy for your people to tell you what is happening to them so you can help them have a better experience. And the reason that matters is not just because, you know, there's all the obvious reasons, Georgie, about, you know, because that will make you compliant with the legislation, that will manage your financial risk around, you know, increasing workers' compensation claims, around, you know, the cost of legal investigations, the cost of payouts and claims, the recruitment costs for replacing people, not because it will manage your risk of losing great talent, not because it will manage your risk of, you know, culture erosion impacting performance and bottom line. It's not for any of those reasons. I'd love to think leaders would step into that opportunity because it's the right thing to do, because people deserve to not be looking over their back when they're at work. And the thing is, if we can support people at work to do better and be better, then those people are going to take that learning home. And you've got half the chance of your workplace being somewhere that just doesn't give people financial reward at the end of the week. It's actually supporting them to be better fathers, better husbands, better community members, better brothers, better sons. Isn't that a great thing? We have an epidemic of of, you know, casual and not so casual violence in our community, and we just need to stop it. So let's start at work.
God, I knew this conversation was going to be good, but it's driven me even more to have these conversations, to bring awareness to these topics. And like I said, like the whole reason when I reached out to you initially, where I started this podcast, was because I want to bring awareness to these issues, and I want to give women a voice and a platform to share their stories. Because once we're aware of something, we do have the power to change it. And I think it's like, sometimes we just want to sweep things under the carpet, but at the end of the day, if we've got skeletons in our closet, they're always going to come out sooner or later. So rather have a more proactive approach to this rather than a reactive approach to it, always, every single time. And as a business, you know, I think that's just what you're creating, what you have created, and what you said today will give people a lot of food for thought to be like, have we got things in place? Do we have some kind of reporting system? And it's not about having, like, oh, I just don't want to create more work for myself. Well, if you don't address this now, then the repercussions, the problems that could come because not addressing it early on, like you said, could end up costing you hundreds of thousands down the track if you don't nip it in the bud right now. Even sort of hopefully maybe identify a few individuals, because it's not going to be everyone. It's the thing. It's like when it comes to culture, you tend to know it's one or two people. But if you don't get rid of those people, they're like a cancer in your business and it will spread. And then you'll be wondering, why are people leaving? Why is the culture so bad? It is typically down to a few individuals that create the bad culture, from what I've experienced and heard anyway. I don't know if you've experienced
anything different. But I also think when people in organizations lose confidence in their leadership, when they believe that their leaders say one thing or do another, when they mm-hmm. believe that we don't really live our values, when people, you know, the most damaging thing is when organizations talk about being, you know, safe to speak up, but then when people do speak up, they're further traumatized. And it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, I think the really big mindset shift that we're trying to lead here, Georgie, is we don't want to be organizations that work shouldn't be about being fearful, and making a report shouldn't make you feel sick with anxiety. Making a report should be easy, and it should be low key, and it should be, hey, this is happening. It's not okay for me. Can you please just make it stop? That's all most people want. And so really, I mean, we've built a platform on principles of compassion, principles of common sense, principles of consistency, like a consistent response to this feedback, I'm going to call it, and obviously it's compliant with the legislation. But really, if you start from compassion and common sense, put your hand up, that's not okay, let's fix it, let's nip it in the bud, bang, I think it removes the fear for organisations. Look, the most people will say to you, we're safe to speak up, but many organisations, many leaders don't really want to get reports because they're terrified it's going to end up in some massive legal drama on the front page of the paper. That is a tiny proportion of what happens, and it's generally when things have been mismanaged and people have been left with no option. Give your people the opportunity to tell you early. It's a gift, because you've then got the opportunity to go in and actually sort some stuff out. I don't believe anybody wants to be leading an organisation where people are frightened every day. Nobody wants to be doing that. So let's actually put a practical measure in place that helps us all.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I could sit here and talk to you all day, Sally. And I'm also really excited that you're going to be on our panel at an upcoming Sisterhood Club social event. And we're going to be diving into these types of topics. What makes a good culture? How can we build a culture of inclusivity, of safety, where people are really feel seen, valued and heard, because they're the organizations that people want to work for. And that's the sort of organizations that I want to be a part of and recruit for as well. So thank you so much for coming on today, sharing your journey, sharing about RespectX. For those people out there that want to find out more about you and follow your journey and find out more about RespectX, if they're an organization, where can I send them? Where should they go to find out more?
www.respectx.com.au. Open it in your browser. Save it to your home screen. But, you know, people can contact us in any of the normal ways. There's an enterprise inquiry inbox on the website. People can message us through LinkedIn. We'd love to hear from anybody. We're in the early startup stages, onboarding companies, you know, every week, which is wildly exciting, and seeing really big positive change. So, you know, it's a scary thing when you start something really new, but we're getting such great feedback and people are having such a great experience. So, you know, we're here for the long haul and we want to make a really big difference. We know we're going to do it.
I have absolutely no doubt. And for every single person that's listened to this, I really hope that you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have. Reach out to Sally, find out more about RespectX. And if you are going through something at the moment at work, please reach out and get help. You do not need to suffer alone and you're not alone. So please, please, please reach out and get some help. But Sally, thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. I appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week, and we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.